Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like, we all think Evan Mobley's the cat's ass. What does everybody else think? Would that be comparable to them if they were ready for their rebuild? Also, Mary-Kate Cabot going to join us at 8:22. So it got brought to my attention yesterday that I had heard some Guardians audio from the midday show about Travis Bezanah not wanting to call him up, and there was a relief of some sort that I had heard that, oh, at least we ain't got to start the clock on him. And I got a little bit upset about it. And then I saw a video that was posted of one of the guys in the midday, Andy Baskin, going after me. Now, I was going to go, well, allow me to retort. But there's two halves to this show. There's really four quarters to this show. But I asked the other half that's on the air for the most part, Anthony, whether or not I should retort. And I'm a kind of... And I went, well, I mean, if you're not going to go along with it, I don't want to hijack the show. If you don't want me to
listen, what I was concerned about is I felt like this station, the chemistry, the rapport had been there. We had truly come a long way. Yeah, under former leadership, I mean, let's be honest, there were private meetings, guys were at each other's throats. Now, working for Keith, I feel like we have been one happy family. Think about it. After the schedule was released, we all took our turns calling into Jake's show. That's camaraderie, and that's how you build it organically. And I thought we were hitting our stride, the ratings. I mean, we're not allowed to talk about ratings, but all insiders know. Oh, what a bang-up job, you know, that we're doing right now. And so what I was worried about, Kenny, was a prolonged dispute with another show with proud colleagues, accomplished broadcasting brethren here in the community. I just didn't know if that was a strategy that made sense for us.
Okay, because I got a couple issues here. The first issue is that I know for a fact that Keith was trying to goad them into doing it, and then they did it.
Everything I just said, throw it out the
window. Marble mouth of Crawford County. Second of all, then that guy went out there and made the video. So Keith made the video and posted on social media that I had to see. All right. And then I was like, hey, you know, I might not do it. I might, you know, Lima doesn't seem to be too interested in it. And Keith's like, then I just let it lie if I were you. Just move on. I'm going, well.
Yeah, focus on the show. Focus on what got us to where we are.
You know, the problem is a lot of people just like to take swings at me, and I'm just not allowed to take swings back. That seems to be my issue here.
Who's been taking swings at you?
Well, I mean, I can't. I'm literally gag ordered to not talk about one media member in this town ever on the air, even though that person took multiple swings at me. We all know who. And then this, you know, I understand that I have no self-esteem, and I don't care about myself. The only thing I care about are other people. And I don't care. So it's interesting when, if you take swings at me, I'm going to obviously escalate the situation. But the problem with that is that other people get their feelings hurt, and then they won't talk to me anymore. And I do have a good, healthy fear. One, that if I do let it ride what I'm feeling right now from what I heard yesterday, that person is going to throw a fit and not going to want to talk to me anymore. Or two, I'm going to end up in a big, nasty meeting with my boss. Because apparently I'm the bad boy. So maybe you're right.
I just wonder what has happened here? Because, I don't know, it felt like Ken Carman, man of the people, is such a success story here in town and had engendered so much support. Fans, approval rating through the roof, other media members all clamoring to be in the good graces of Ken. Has something happened here? Has something happened where now can you feel like you are the focus, you are the target of some animosity?
Well, no,
where did this come
the
from?
The issue was
you were happy-go-lucky Ken that got along with everybody.
The issue was,
where did this come from? Were there disputes that need to be settled now within the broadcasting realm?
Well, it seems to be one person, and then there's like another person who's about to be.
Well, that's two.
But now you don't want me to say it, and now
that'll
it's
making be three.
See, you telling me I don't want to say it makes me want to say it. And by the way, with the listeners and the fans, I have no problem with them. Certainly, they know that.
I do think we're pretty inside right now.
You want to play the audio?
Everyone knows.
Play the audio. Go ahead and play.
Well, we've got a couple different ways that we could go about
all right,
this.
So I went after them the other day about the Travis Bezanna stuff because it felt to me like they were celebrating Travis Bezanna not being able
More
to come back.
More specifically, you said Andy Baskin.
I did,
when you went after it.
And I mentioned Baskin.
Scotty!
And then Baskin, you got the audio over there. Go ahead, play the audio.
What is up, Scotty?
No,
what's
that's
up,
not
my
the
man?
That's not the audio,
clip.
Owen.
I thought I had the right one. All right, here is his response to your response.
Here's what I'm going to say. Ken, before you want to rip someone, make sure you know what you're listening to. And if somebody hands you something that you should know on the air, bud, you should probably know what you're talking about because I didn't say that.
I did.
Jeff said that. So let's try to get facts straight. Don't let them get in the way of trying to entertain. Ken, you were 1,000% wrong, and then you had the opportunity to apologize, and you didn't. So I'll leave it at that, and I'll let you go back and do your little show tomorrow morning. And you can play this clip, and you can play it to your heart's desire, but an apology probably would be on the table, and having someone do your preparation for you and telling you what you think is or isn't, probably not a good move. Thanks.
So those two things are what bothered me. If I got you wrong, I'll apologize for getting you wrong on the air. That's fine. And by the way, it's open for anybody to call in. If Baskin wanted to call in and defend himself or even run in here in studio and talk about it, that's fine. And I would apologize. I've been wrong before and I've embarrassed myself by being wrong before. That's fine. When you do the other two things that you said, that's what bothered me.
Well, so he was waiting for
that's
an apology opportunity.
Yeah, and I did not. What was the opportunity to apologize?
Well,
I didn't know I was to apologize for anything.
He did walk in at the end of our show yesterday as we do our crossover where we switch between shows.
Okay.
And he made a mention of that and you taking a shot at him. And I believe you guys in your haste to clear out the studio.
I didn't say a word to him yesterday.
Well, I know. He wanted you to.
Yeah,
he brought it up when you walked through the door.
So he was mad that I didn't recognize him?
He brought it up when he walked through the door and you did not even, you paid no mind to Andy Baskin.
I'm sorry, there was work that must be done.
A perfect position to see these things transition.
I'm not saying that I talked to him and nothing got brought up. I didn't talk to him.
There was some scuttlebutt behind the scenes with some people about the comment regarding the wet blanket from 10 to 2. I think that might have been the one he was maybe looking for an apology. Because that wouldn't be the way that I think most shows would like to be characterized as the wet blanket.
You got any more audio
show over
there? Okay.
No.
So, yeah, he was upset because apparently there was something on this sheet here that Mitch makes that Mitch had written the two wet blankets, which I had said on the air. I called them the two wet blankets from 10 to 2.
Yeah,
but
let's
I said
not say that,
that
Mitch made that up himself. He usually gets that from you.
No, yeah. I said that. But, again, this sheet, see, if Baskin wants to talk about other people's prep, this sheet, I don't look at this sheet. Mitch could write that my mom sews socks in hell over and over and over again. I don't look at this sheet. This is for tone. I don't look at that sheet. I write down everything.
It is supposed to be a helpful additive and a resource for
me
to get ready for the show because I famously don't write a lot of stuff down.
If you want to talk about what other people... See, now you're going to get me going. Because if you want to talk about what other people heard, maybe you should have heard it yourself.
Bud, you should probably know what you're talking about.
Wow.
I mean, hey, if the show that walks in at 9:56 every morning wants to talk about who works harder on their show, please, by all means, talk to your audience about it.
See, now we're going to have to reserve another window for an apology.
By all means. Oh, I'm sorry. They showed up at 9:54. I beg your pardon. When do those defensive coordinators and running backs coach talks? Hopefully there's sometime between 10 and 2. I know somebody's hoping for it. Okay, I've said enough. One more thing. He said he got texts. How come he got texts about something that I said, and I didn't get any text about anything he said yesterday. Okay. On the little show. All right, got it. Just making sure. Making sure of that. All right. Yeah, but I do apologize for getting them wrong about which one was celebrating
that's
the Travis Bazan.
So the words are the same. Just put them on Jeff.
But he's more than willing to talk about sports and that stuff.
Ken's on a one-day apology delay. So tomorrow at this time,
I didn't know. What do I have to apologize for?
Well, we had the opportunity to play the audio, and we didn't play the audio. And then Andy was in the audio that we should have played saying he wanted to see Bazana.
Okay. Sorry
Jeff
about that.
Jeff said he did not want to see
that. I apologize for that. I ain't walking away from two wet blankets.
I hope this isn't the incident that we will forever remember. Like the Hugh Grant show transformed the late night wars. I hope this...
The magic hour?
The wet blanket incident does not divide this show where we look back 10 years from now and said, man, things were humming. Until the wet blanket incident.
What do you want to do at 9:45 this morning?
More of the wet blanket incident.
Should we recap what Jim Ossarski says, or will it just present itself?
Yay!
Kenny Pickett. Mm. Dylan Gabriel. You're not going to do this? Come on. Fine.
I'm supposed to go yay for Dylan
by myself
Gabriel?
Here? Yeah, why wouldn't you say yay for Dylan Gabriel?
I didn't want him before the draft.
So what? You don't have any hope for him?
Then they overdrafted him by like maybe at least a round,
all
maybe
right,
two.
You're just a boatload of fun this morning. Okay, let's bring in Mary Kay Cabot, who joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. It's like you came in and farted on my pillow while I was in bed, Tone. Hello, Mary Kay.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
Could you help out this crotchety bastard over here? Because he's just in a bad mood all day.
Oh, it's almost the weekend, the holiday weekend. So much to look forward to.
Yeah, Tone, come on.
Could have been nicer weather. That's all I'm saying.
All right, could have been nicer weather. He's right about that. Mary Kay, what is this? What is this balderdash you're writing about Deshaun Watson coming back this year? What are you doing to me? What are you doing to us?
Well, he wants to come back this year. He's determined to come back this year. Does that mean he's going to come back this year? We have no idea what the plan is for that, but he is working round the clock to try to get back. He believes that he can play again and possibly even play this season. So I have no idea where that's going to go, but I will say this. Every single time that we have asked the Browns about Deshaun Watson, they have never completely slammed the door shut on him. So you just never know. I doubt he's going to play this season. I highly doubt it. And I do actually think that a change of scenery would be best for him and for the Browns. But the point is, he's out there in Berea throwing to Jerry Jeudy, throwing to David Bell, and making really, really good progress in his recovery.
It's very weird here, Mary Kay, because like he has every right to be in the facility. But it's like, man, it seems they've drafted two rookies. We know what Jimmy Haslam's comments were. Like, the franchise seems to be moving on. Could this become a distraction over time? Like, if he's IR'd, say he's IR'd this year, he still has the right to walk in there and be a part of the teammates and be a part of the organization. Could this become some sort of a distraction or weirdness here?
You know, I really don't think so. The way that everyone's talking about him, even the rookie quarterbacks are talking about him in sort of mentorship terms. He's in the meeting rooms with them. He's trying to help those guys as much as he possibly can. For them, it might be sort of, I don't know, inspirational a little bit to see someone working so hard to come back from an injury like that. I really don't know. I haven't talked to them about that aspect of it, but so far, everyone's been really, really positive about it. The messaging is positive from Kevin to Andrew to the players. So at this point, I'm going to say no on the distraction piece.
Yeah, I think the hard part is, Mary Kay, to have, you know, this many guys in that quarterback room, and obviously one of them is not going to be able to play this year. But at least from the messaging, he still thinks he's got, you know, a reserve spot for himself in the room. I think it makes it hard because in most situations around the NFL, you have one guy that, based on where he's drafted, he is kind of anointed like, all right, that's the one that's going to get the reps or the one we're going to be working on, you know, growing throughout the years. In this case, they don't have that at all. They have this competition, but then they have the guy they went out and got this offseason, actually two of those guys, one they traded for. So it's just tough. We don't see a lot of analog for this in the NFL.
No, you really don't. This is a very, very unique situation. And then again, when you add in the Deshaun Watson piece, it adds just a whole other layer to this thing. And who knows, maybe they are sprucing him up to salvage something from this trade down the road. We don't really know. Maybe they think perhaps if he looks good enough, somebody will try to trade for him or give them some amount of money. So you just never know what the actual plan is going to be, but it is definitely a unique situation. And as I wrote about yesterday, I really think that they have to decide on their quarterback as soon as possible because they really have a tough early part of the schedule, one that includes 5 out of 6 games on the road from weeks 4 through 9. Ooh. Five out of six on the road. If they don't survive that gauntlet in the schedule, then the second half of the season is a wash, and it's going to be very difficult to keep really good, savvy Pro Bowl veterans locked in down the stretch.
I know you wrote about this in the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com earlier this week, Mary Kay, but can you tell us what you know that the Browns, how they plan to kind of work these four quarterbacks around with reps and such during training camp?
Well, what they're going to be doing is running concurrent passing drills to the extent that they can. Now, you can't always do that because when you get to 11 on 11s, which are going to be starting in OTAs next week, when you get into those kinds of things, then you're going to not be able to do that to that extent. But they should be able to run as many of these drills as they possibly can side by side. And they'll have two quarterbacks in those drills, each of those drills, and they'll have about 6 receivers in each of those passing drills. And by the time they get done with OTAs, they should have a pretty good idea of where this is going.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us here on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. What has Sanders been like in the building? Because I got to tell you here, Mary Kay, I'm finding him more and more likable. I liked him before. I think there's something about, man, if he would have been taken number 2 overall, I think there would have been a slew of naysayers. I think there would have been a bunch of people talking about him being overdrafted. But, man, he goes in the 5th round, and now it seems like it's this prove them all wrong underdog story in some way. I like that type of thing, and it's really got me rooting for him here. What's it been like with the organization so far?
Well, the thing about Shador, and I started noticing this early on in the process, way back when he went to the East-West Shrine Bowl, and then when I watched him operate and move around at the Super Bowl and at the NFL Honors, you can kind of pick up what a person is like and how they treat people. And I liked him from the jump, from a personality standpoint. He is extremely, extremely likable. He's funny. He's always got that smile on his face. He is self-deprecating in some ways, even though he calls himself legendary. He says all the right things. I thought he did a phenomenal job with his podium interview at rookie mini camp, and he got asked a lot of tough questions, and he handled them all really, really well. I think he's sort of built for this spotlight. And once again, as you mentioned, he is a likable person, and that's how it's playing in the building. The Browns like him. They liked him throughout the whole entire process. I think that's one of the reasons why they jumped back up there in the 5th round and grabbed him. I don't think that they wanted to see Shador suffer anymore and Deion suffer anymore, and they wanted to give this young man the chance in the NFL that they felt that he deserves. So he is very well liked in the building. I think he's going to be a really, really good teammate. He's been known for that. And I think it's going to make things interesting.
If in the end, Mary Kay, after we get through all of mini camp and training camp and preseason, and there's really not that much of a gap between Shedeur Sanders and Dylan Gabriel, who ends up being higher in the depth chart?
Well, that's a good question. I can't answer that right now, because if you really are trying to conduct a fair and equitable quarterback competition, then you can't answer that right now. I know how they're heading in, and I've said it numerous times. I believe they're heading in Kenny 1, Dylan 2, and then Joe and Shedeur 3 and 4, 4 and 3, something like that. But how it ends up, it all depends on them. Those guys can go out there, build on their strengths, correct their weaknesses, and they can knock the socks off of whoever is making this decision. The ultimate decision will be Kevin Stefanski's, because that's his role, is to choose the starting quarterback. But those guys can go out there and they can jumble up this order and they can mix things up by what they do. And there are certain things that each one of them are going to have to work on. And if they can overcome the things that have held them back to this point, then it's anybody's ball game right now, regardless of how it's beginning.
Mary Kay Cabot with us on the show. When it comes to Joe Flacco, or maybe even Kenny Pickett, have you heard anything? I mean, I know they're having owners meetings right now up in Minnesota, or they were earlier this week. Have you heard anything from any other teams creeping about the possibility of making a trade or anything like that for either one of those two guys, or is it too early?
It's too early. Right now, the Browns have no intentions of trading any of those quarterbacks. They want to conduct this four-way competition. They strategically set out to fill the quarterback room up with these four players, and they wanted a very experienced veteran, a little bit less experienced veteran with plenty of upside, and then at least one rookie. They ended up with two. So that's how they wanted this to go, and no, they have no plans of trading a quarterback anytime soon. But of course, once they get to cutdown day on August 27th, they will definitely be open to whatever comes their way, and they will be answering the phone and fielding calls and maybe even making calls of their own to try to move one or two of these guys. But as of right now, the Saints or anybody, they won't be able to get their hands on one of them yet.
Mary Kay, I know you did some reporting on that Charles Woodson news, kind of joining on the ownership team with a very, very small stake. What do you think the purpose was for the Haslams to open that up?
Well, I think that the NFL is working hard to match former players with owners, former players that really would like to get involved in NFL ownership. And they were introduced to Charles, and they had a really, really good meeting with him. They liked him, and vice versa. He's an Ohio native, and there was just a lot that was right about it. And as you mentioned, it's a very, very small stake, but it could go a long way. He can be very instrumental in helping this team. He doesn't have anywhere near the stake that Tom Brady has in the Raiders. His is 0.1%. Tom Brady has 5%. It was about a $5 million investment for him. So it's small and almost ceremonial, but it, you know, it can go a long way. I mean, if you put Charles Woodson in a room in front of these players, that can have an enormous impact. He's got a tremendous resume. He's been there. Obviously, he's a Hall of Famer. Once again, he's from Ohio. And I just think it adds another layer of, of greatness to showing these guys how things can be done.
Do you like, that's a weird way to say it. Are you in favor of the Tush Push staying? The Browns were one of the teams that voted to keep the Tush Push. Do you think that that might be because they have a very close relationship with the Philadelphia Eagles?
Well, I think that's part of it. I mean, Kevin is really, really good friends with Nick Sirianni. Andrew Berry is great friends with Howie Roseman. It's almost like their sister football team in the NFL. And, of course, we know that the Berry twins work for both teams. So there's just a lot of crossover between the teams. They're practicing against them, again, in joint practices this summer. So I do think that there was some of that involved. But I think they probably also admire the play, like the play. I don't like the play. I don't care for it at all. I don't feel like it's a good, sound, solid, mature football play. I just don't like it. I mean, if you can find yourself, I wrote this yesterday, if you can find yourself a Jacoby Brissett or someone that can go out there and get a yard for you on a sneak, if you have to push somebody like that to get the yard, I'm just not loving that. So I don't like it, but they did a great job in their presentation. And if this is going to end, it's not going to be this year, maybe not even next year. They're going to have to, somebody would have to get hurt or something would have to change drastically.
Playoff seeding, do you like it? Did it seem, Tone, that they wanted to do it NBA style in the NFL with playoff seeding? Or they were going to reseed after the first round, things like that? The Tone, go ahead and give her what you want.
The NBA changed their format.
No, I'm asking your question. I'm sorry.
You know, I don't know how many years ago they changed their format to where the record was going to be the difference maker regardless of whether you won your division or not. So it looks like they're maintaining what they believe to be the integrity of the divisions. Do we know where the Browns would have fallen on that, given that the Browns have never won this division in a long time for many of the people listening for their entire lives?
I don't know where they would have fallen on that. I really don't. We haven't had a chance to ask them that yet. But down the road, I would not mind at all changing up the seating, because I don't think that you should necessarily get rewarded for playing in a lesser division.
Ooh.
I think it should be more of a level playing field, and it should be how good you are, not where you had the benefit of playing. And, you know, I just think that it would be a lot more fair if they changed it up and tweaked it.
Mary Kay, you're one of the best. You know we love you, and we'll talk to you again next week. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Mary Kay Cabot on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Wow, that was...
Is that shots fired to the NFC South and Baker Mayfield?
Is that shots fired to my old ways? Is that me? Listen, I get what you guys are saying, but I also think it's cyclical, or at least it should be cyclical. If you have a division of inept organizations continue to be inept, that's fine, but I still think it's a cyclical thing. Teams that bottom out tend to get better players.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
They tend to be better over time. How good they are, well, for that period of time, we'll find out. But damn it, I think that winning a division, this is the last bastion where I think divisions matter. It doesn't matter. Hockey fans, forgive me, I don't know, so I don't mean to besmirch your sport. Maybe it's a big deal. But when it comes to basketball, I don't think anybody could name the division or the teams. I think our listeners could. I think that there's a lot of people who couldn't name the teams in their division. In baseball, I don't think anybody cares maybe a little bit about the Tigers, and that's it. This is a division where it matters. Now, we are blessed to be in a division where these rivalries matter.
NFC the North, NFC North,
I'd say. Yeah.
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 Seems like those two are the ones, and the NFC East.
The NFC East, because everybody hates Cowboys, and those other three teams are within an hour and a half whatever it is of each other.
I guess what I am wondering is, why do we still need these four team divisions? The reason I ask that question is, I still think even if you enlarge the divisions, went to either six teams or whatever, and if there's ever NFL expansion, that could blow up the whole model as we know it anyway.
True.
But if you expanded, you can still have it where you designate two or three teams, you play home and home every year no matter what, so you get the fans going to each other's venue, even though it's never going to be like baseball in that regard. But I still think you could do that, and it still will matter. Those games will all matter.
They always matter, but I think it bastardizes it in the end. I mean, could we find ourselves, real quick on, can we find ourselves in a situation like the Lions and Vikings did last year? There was real fever to that game.
And week 18.
Yes, and I would like to find us, or I think the Ravens and Steelers have been in that situation before, have they not?
Yes.
I would like to find us in that situation, God willing, someday.
The one thing that we've all missed, we missed it as a show, was there's still... if you win your division, you're still making the playoffs. You're just not going to get an automatic 1-4 seed.
Right.
So they still need the division from that stance, unless you want to get rid of, you know, then you just go to the top 7 or top 8, whatever they end up changing the playoff format to. Records make it, right? And then maybe occasionally there is a 9th team that is left out of it. If you go to 8, you have a lot of, you do have more teams that finish with the same record but lose a tiebreaker, and these divisions are used for the tiebreaker stuff.
Well, was the original point of having these divisions to begin with, did it have anything to do with geographical stuff?
Yeah,
because obviously that doesn't matter now. Everybody can just get on.
Well, now we're talking about when they when the Texans came in and they had to redraw the league, right? Because there used to be an AFC Central, and that went away, and so that was something. It was like the Colts were in it. It was the Browns, the Colts,
the Colts.
No, I'm sorry,
Colts were in the AFC East.
Yeah, they were in the Oilers. They were still there.
Then you had a weird buffer time with Jacksonville that was in it. But I'm just asking, what was the point of ever having such small divisions? What was the point of
scheduling? It's easier to schedule as a 16 game season that way. It made things very easy for how they did it, because you played 6 games were in your division. You had a different division from your conference and the other one.
But
and
it was then the balance. Two that part of it you. Was scheduling balance. So they were saying, look, it's hard with 16 games to ever compare all these different teams. So let's just focus on who's going to be the best of these 4 team groups. My thing is, which you're all going to have the same schedules
right.
as everybody else. You just don't play yourself. So you basically would have the same exact schedule, have your NFC conference, and then have your crossover games. But now you've gone to a 17 game schedule, and right around the corner, we're going to be in an 18 game schedule. So to me, that even lessens that you're going to get less scheduling balance because you're adding a whole nother game. And now that you're playing games overseas in Europe and London and all that, to me, doesn't it make sense now to just, I don't even know that we need divisions, period. I don't know why you can't just have NFC and AFC.
I think we need divisions. Why do you need them? Because I think it protects what the games are supposed to mean. I think it protects geographical rivalries. I think it does protect some of the geographical changes. And also, like, how do we determine what games are protected? You mentioned games that are protected. All right. Do we always have to protect the Steelers and Browns, or does that become a conversation? Do we always have to protect the Cowboys and Commanders, or does that become a conversation? 49ers as well, even though that's cross-division.
Like, ask a Chiefs fan who's not me, who didn't grow up that way, right? Ask somebody that's been a kid that's 18 years old that has been a Chiefs fan for 10 years, right? The Bills are probably their biggest rival right now. Would they get the 2 games with the Bills then? Because
did they even remember that Seattle was in the AFC West back in the day?
Absolutely not.
That Dave Craig and John Elway would have these
battles. All the way up to Holmgren, they were still there.
Yeah, so I think what I'm wondering is, Kenny, if you got rid of divisions altogether, are you telling me that Pittsburgh-Cleveland would become meaningless?
No, but I think it would take some of the teeth out of it. And I think that we have this, myself included, I have this vision of grandeur that someday you play them for a division. And to have that opportunity, we've robbed ourselves of that opportunity many times, obviously, but to not have that opportunity in the future, I think it lessens some of the fun that happens out of the regular season. The regular season in itself is starting to become a little bit taxing. You're making a longer season, because remember, it's not just going to be an 18th game. It's going to be 2 more weeks. It's a game, and they are definitely going to add a bye week to that.
Yes.
So now you're making the schedule longer. This is the same stuff we bitch about when it comes to baseball and basketball and hockey.
So you're saying
these long regular seasons,
and they're not tacking it on the front end. Yes. So it's going to be tacked on in the back.
Exactly. So you still play for more. Yes.
Are you saying
for something?
So this is like an in-season tournament? I mean, that's what a division will mean to you?
In so many ways, yes. In so many ways, yes.
How many seasons since we've been on air here has the season not went the Browns way, but at least you held on to, we're playing the Steelers this weekend, and we got to beat the Steelers.
Winning the division helps it stand for something. Because at some point, if you get rid of the divisions, or if you were to still have divisions, but you still, the more pointless thing to do, if you still have divisions, but you're still like, okay, 1-7, boom. There you go.
That's like, what the NBA does.
And you are going to see divisions that just don't have a playoff team because they're getting beat from seven other teams across three other divisions. And then you are going to lose a lot of interest in those teams. And I don't think that that's what they do. That's the exact opposite of what the NFL wants. Even the terrible suck-ass teams from the AFC North that we've said before, they still have, all right, if you get to the playoffs, we got a chance.
I see. This is where I think things have changed a little bit and evolved. I think most fans are rooting for the Browns to lose games those final 3 weeks, even if they're divisional opponents. How many times have we played the Bengals?
To help their draft stock?
Right, that's what I'm saying.
To help their draft stock.
So what has that even helped
us? But if you have a 8-win football team that finds itself on the outside looking in, even if it's the lead in the division, you're killing that. If you're still an 8-win football team, all right, well, Joe Blow still has an opportunity to go buy a ticket to go see the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or whoever in the AFC or NFC South, because it usually does end up that way for whatever reason, to go see that team go ahead and play for a division title, even if it's goofy amongst the others. And we have seen those teams win before in the playoffs. I just
think a division title would mean more if there were more teams. Just beating three other teams, when really the goal is to win the Super Bowl, just doesn't seem to mean much to me in 2025 as it did when I was younger.
216-474-0092. Do we still need divisions?
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.